Welcome to the deep dive. So you've handed us this stack of sources that really details a massive shift in corporate accountability. And our mission today is to distill the absolute legal reality for technology executives. We're really cutting through the noise here, not about company fines, but about one thing, your personal liability.
Yeah.
Specifically, the criminal and civil penalties a CTO or a CISO faces when, you know, inadequate IT security leads to IP theft.
That's exactly right. For years, the story was, well, pretty simple. The corporation paid the fine. Life went on. That whole comfortable era, it's over. Enforcement is now actively targeting individuals. It's making personal exposure for things like negligence or concealment real significant and growing.
And we need to set the stakes right away. This isn't just about losing your job. It's not even just about a civil suit. We're talking about federal charges that can carry, and this is the headline number, up to a $5 million fine and 15 years in federal prison for economic espionage. So for you, the listener, this means moving beyond just, you know, enhancing security for the company. Now it's about improving your infrastructure as a strategic necessity for your personal freedom.
The shift is just profound because it personalizes the risk entirely. Historically, bad security was a corporate failure. Now, if that failure lets millions in IP walk out the door, prosecutors see it as individual negligence that, you know, facilitated a federal crime.
Okay, so let's unpack those hard penalties in our first section. An executive needs to know exactly what they're up against. What are the federal laws that can turn an internal security issue into a personal criminal indictment?
Well, federal law gives prosecutors several really powerful tools. The baseline, the starting point, is simple trade secret theft. That's covered under 18 U.S.C. section 1832.
Okay.
And if you are found to have enabled through negligence, through inaction, the theft of proprietary data, you're facing up to 10 years in prison and a $250,000 personal fine.
10 years is already serious, but the risk really skyrockets with the Economic Espionage Act, right?
It absolutely does. If the theft is seen to benefit a foreign government or agent, even indirectly, prosecutors can charge under the Economic Espionage Act. That's 18 U.S.C. section 1831. This is where you hit that maximum personal exposure, up to 15 years in prison and that $5 million fine. And the focus here isn't on the executive's direct involvement, but on their culpable failure to secure the data in the first place.
And we can't forget the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, the CFAA,
yeah.
18 U.S.C. section 1030. Now, that statute usually covers hackers. How does it end up looping in a CTO?
Yeah, this is a subtle but really powerful stacking charge. The CFAA prohibits unauthorized access. So if a compromised system or maybe a former employee steals IP, prosecutors can argue that the CTO who was responsible for basic access controls like MFA or timely patching was criminally negligent. You failed to prevent the unauthorized access. The penalties there can go up to 20 years. It turns basic system hygiene negligence into a federal felony.
And the gravity of all this is just hammered home by the federal sentencing rules. This isn't like the state system where you might get out early.
Exactly. This is a crucial, really sobering detail. Federal sentences require you to serve a minimum of 85% of your time. So if you're convicted and sentenced to 10 years, you are serving at least 8.5 years. The consequences are rigid. They are non-negotiable.
So beyond the feds, the legal battlefield just gets bigger with state laws, which can stack on even more charges. Can you give us a couple examples of that state-level exposure?
Oh, yeah. You see huge variability. A company with operations in California could expose its executives to state charges. That might mean up to 3 years and a $100,000 fine. But then you look at Florida, and their trade secret theft laws can carry a maximum sentence of 15 years and a $250,000 fine. This geographical complexity means your decisions have to meet the highest legal standard across all the places you operate.
So the federal charges carry the weight, but the state laws just add layers of legal peril. Okay, let's switch to the financial side. Even if you manage to avoid a conviction, what is the scale of personal financial risk here?
The defense costs alone are just staggering. For a complex federal criminal case, even if you're ultimately acquitted, defense costs typically run between $1.5 to $5 million or even more. And that money has to be paid, you know, immediately.
Yeah. And that's just the defense.
Yeah.
Civil liability often completely overshadows those costs.
Precisely. If IP theft happens, the company faces huge civil exposure. Then shareholders or customers file suits, shareholder derivative suits, customer class actions, and they often target the officers for breach of fiduciary duty. These liabilities can realistically range from, say, $50 million up to $500 million or more. And if the corporate veil is pierced, your personal assets, your home, your retirement, everything, it's all at risk.
But wait, isn't D&O insurance directors and officers insurance supposed to be the safety net for this? Why do the sources call it a critical false comfort?
Because that insurance often has these gaping holes that are designed for exactly this scenario. The policies almost always exclude coverage for criminal acts, intentional misconduct, and fraud. So when prosecutors come after an executive, they intentionally frame the failure as willful blindness or a knowing failure to act, which are the exact allegations that let the insurance carrier deny your coverage. You're left funding a multi-million dollar defense completely out of pocket.
That is a vital piece of nuance. Is there any protection left in D&O at all?
There is one clause you have to look for, the severability clause. If the policy has one, it might protect the innocent directors and officers from having their coverage denied, even if another officer like the CTO is accused of fraud. But if your D&O policy lacks that clause, everyone sinks together. It's a point executives really have to review today.
Okay, the financial and legal exposure is clearly existential. So now that we understand the cost, let's talk about the mechanism. How do prosecutors actually bridge that gap between a server vulnerability and putting a criminal charge on an executive?
The foundational theory they use is criminal negligence or willful blindness. They don't have to prove you intentionally stole the IP. They just need to prove you had knowledge, or reasonably should have had knowledge, of critical security failures and you willfully failed to act. That makes the IP theft a foreseeable result.
So the argument is basically, you knew the vault was full of gold, you knew the alarm was off, and you explicitly ignored multiple warnings about it.
That's the simplest way to put it, yes. They hunt for internal communications, emails, presentations, meeting minutes that show the CTO was warned again and again about these risks, and then they show the failure to actually do something about it.
And the second major theory, which has really picked up steam with the SEC, is securities fraud.
Right, this is for public companies, and it's triggered by misrepresentation. So if your company claims robust industry-leading controls in a public filing, like a 10K, but your own internal presentation state, the environment, is in a very vulnerable state, that discrepancy becomes criminal fraud. You misrepresented the security health to investors, and the maximum penalty there, $5 million plus 20 years, just shows how serious lying to the market is.
Which means every PowerPoint slide, every single internal email detailing a vulnerability is now discoverable evidence in a potential criminal trial.
Absolutely. And then finally, you've got the low-hanging fruit for prosecutors, obstruction of justice aiding and abetting. This is the cover-up charge. Concealing an incident, deleting emails, misleading the FBI. It's often way easier to prove than the initial negligence, and it always carries heavy penalties.
Well, let's look at some of the cases that cemented these theories. The Uber CSO case, Jane Sullivan, is sort of the textbook example of how the cover-up becomes a crime.
Yeah, Sullivan was convicted not for the 2016 breach itself, but for the cover-up. He disguised a $100,000 payment to hackers as a bug bounty and had them sign NDAs to hide the breach from federal regulators who were already investigating the company. His actions turned a corporate crisis into his own personal criminal liability. It's the precedent that shows security execs who conceal incidents face prison time.
And then there's the SolarWinds case with CSO Timothy Brown. Now, those charges were dismissed late last year, but the case still showed the SEC's willingness to personally charge a CISO for allegedly defrauding investors.
The lesson there is just crystal clear. The process is the punishment. Even though the charges were dismissed, it cost millions in legal fees. Massive reputational damage. The SEC used his own internal emails documenting the actual dangerous state of their infrastructure as evidence against him personally. It established that personal prosecution based on misrepresentation is a very real threat.
And then there was the Yahoo executives case. That didn't even involve criminal prosecution, but a shareholder suit resulted in a $29 million settlement paid personally by executives. It just demonstrates that personal financial liability for failure of oversight is there, even without the DOJ getting involved.
That case really illustrates that if the security failure is big enough, the civil courts will make sure personal assets are on the table no matter what.
Okay, so given these legal mechanisms, let's detail our third section.
Yeah.
The red flags that turn a corporate failure into an individual indictment. What are investigators looking for when they go through a CTO's paper trail?
They're looking for direct, documented evidence of knowledge and then inaction. The number one red flag is written warnings ignored. This is staff email saying, if we don't fix this, IP will walk out the door. Consultant reports identifying critical risks, pen test results.
They want the smoking gun. The document that predicts the disaster and the proof that the person in charge saw it and just dismissed it.
Exactly. Red flag number two is budget negligence. Did the CTO consistently cut essential security requests? Did they submit a zero increase budget despite knowing the risks were growing? Or did they divert security funds to something like marketing? This shows a willful choice. You prioritized profit over protection.
And the third, which links right back to obstruction of justice, is concealment. Not reporting known vulnerabilities to the board, covering up incidents, or, cooking the books on security metrics to look better for regulators.
And a fourth really crucial red flag is willful indifference. This is ignoring or just failing to implement basic industry standard security measures. We're talking about things like multi-factor authentication for critical systems, failing to encrypt IP databases, or, and this is the most damning, repeatedly overruling your qualified security staff without any documented risk-accepted justification.
Which brings us to this idea of the reasonable CTO standard. Courts don't expect perfect security, right? So, but they do demand reasonable steps. What does reasonable actually mean in a courtroom?
It means they judge your actions against industry best practices, often referencing frameworks like NIST or ISO. If the risk was foreseeable, the entire industry issued a patch advisory and you ignored it for 6 months. That's strong evidence of negligence. The CEO can often claim they relied on the CTO. The CTO, as the expert, can't claim ignorance. The math is just brutal. Knowledge plus inaction, personal criminal liability.
That brings us to section four, the CTO's personal shield. If an executive is listening now and they're realizing, I have some of those red flags in my past, how do they immediately start protecting their career and their freedom?
Your personal shield is built on proactive, documented transparency and making sure you have absolute board alignment. We call this the documentation defense. It shifts the legal burden from your inaction to the board's documented refusal of resources.
Okay, what specific documents do you need to start generating and maintaining, maybe even at a personal file separate from the companies?
You have to diligently maintain a few things. Quarterly risk assessments that actually quantify risk, detailed itemized budget requests that prove you asked for what you needed, comprehensive board reports that document what leadership knew and when they knew it, and of course, any communications showing you elevated concerns to the CEO or CFO. And these documents have to be contemporaneous.
So let's talk about this specific communication outlined in the sources. The email that could save your freedom. Sending an email that explicitly details personal criminal risk to the board sounds like a career grenade. I mean, doesn't that make you an immediate liability who gets fired?
That is the necessary tension. It's a calculated risk, but when you're facing criminal liability, job security becomes secondary to personal freedom. This formal communication has to go to the CEO, the CFO, and the Board Audit Committee Chair. It has to be professional, formal, and use precise legal language.
Okay, so give us the specifics. What must that email contain to actually be effective in court?
It must do four things. One, formally document the critical security vulnerabilities with technical evidence. Two, calculate the financial exposure, quantify it. Three, request a specific, sufficient budget for remediation, the exact dollar amount. And four, and this is the most important part, explicitly warn that continued inaction creates a material adverse effect on the company's fiduciary duties and creates personal criminal liability risk for officers.
Why that precise language?
Because it forces a documented decision. If a breach happens, your defense is, I warned them, I quantified the risk, and I explicitly highlighted their personal legal exposure. It transforms your failure to fix the problem into management's documented refusal to fund the fix. It creates a firewall for you.
But what happens if, after that bombshell email, the board still refuses to fund it? This is where we hit the nuclear option. When to walk away.
At that point, the risk to your personal freedom has become untenable. If there's a repeated refusal of funding despite documented critical risks, if the CEO directs you to misrepresent security, or if you're told to conceal a breach, resignation is not optional. It is a necessary defense strategy.
And before taking that step, the executive needs to make sure they've retained personal counsel, right?
Absolutely. You must retain a criminal defense attorney who is separate from company counsel. They will guide you on how to properly preserve and document everything, that whole documentation defense file, before you resign, making sure your resignation gives you maximum protection.
So what does this all mean for the executive today? Let's just synthesize this new enforcement reality.
The core takeaway is that the law now treats inadequate cybersecurity as a corporate crime that's enabled by executive negligence. Personal criminal liability for CTOs and CISOs is now the operating assumption. You are uniquely exposed because you are the technical expert. You're required to know, to act, and to mitigate.
And the financial reality is undeniable. The cost of adequate security is somewhere between, what, $2 and $5 million a year. The cost of your personal criminal defense is also $1 to $5 million, plus, even if you win. The strategic choice now have to be made with your freedom in mind.
Documented due diligence is now completely synonymous with self-preservation.
We want to leave you with one final strategic challenge to think about today as you review your own budgets and your risk assessments. Your legal duty is to the corporation, yes, but your personal liability demands you prioritize your documentation defense. So ask yourself this: can those two duties truly coexist in my organization today, or am I sacrificing my freedom for a board that has consistently refused to fund the risk?
If the honest answer suggests the risks are too high, you have only three defensible options: fix the security immediately, document comprehensively that you tried and were denied, or resign. Ignoring this new reality, well, it pretty much guarantees prison time. Your freedom depends on your documentation.